I'd like to call the meeting to order. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Could you please all rise? If you would face the flag and follow after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
There was no action taken in closed session. I would like to say thank you for everyone coming tonight to honor our retirees and our students that we're going to be recognizing tonight. So thank you very much for coming. Our student representative, Petra Nabi. Is there a report there that we could maybe you could read for us, Ms. Scott? Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. This report comes from Marysville High School. Ending April, the Marysville High School leadership put on a spring elections leadership conference. Students interested in running for leadership position for the 2019-2020 school year came to this conference to get trained on how their leadership position is done and what to expect when they enter into the leadership class. Lots of students came, and the games were very exciting. To start May off right, Marysville High School had a top-notch awards lunch activity for all the students who received this award. The students loved this event every year and loved socializing with the teachers who gave them the award. Picnic day was May the 17th, and there were many lawn games for students to play during lunch. There was a blood drive May the 23rd with multiple students and staff donating blood to help others. The last event at Marysville High School is the Senior Send-Off Rally, which honors the seniors who will be graduating. This is the last rally the school puts on for this year. The seniors will get to watch their senior video at the rally, and it ends with fun that they had for that school year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Next, we're going to have presentations. Our first presentation is from our Boga School, the Eco Challenge. And Mr. Fleury, did you want to speak to that just a little bit, or we have Mrs. Jones here that can talk?
I had it put on the agenda for Mrs. Jones, and she's going to have a slideshow of what the Eco Challenge is and what they've achieved this year, right? Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Jones? Kids? And if anybody would like to take pictures or do filming of anything, feel free.
We got a new board out in front from the money they won.
Hello, my name is Debbie Jones. I'm a sixth grade teacher at Arboga Elementary School. I'm pleased to present to you this team of nine highly motivated students who are celebrating their first place win in the Lexus Eco Challenge and a total of $25,000 in award money for their efforts. The Arboga Wildfighters are one of only eight first-place teams nationwide in this Lexus Eco Challenge, a national STEM program and contest that inspires and empowers middle school and high school students to learn about the environment and take action to improve it. Earlier this academic year, the Arboga Wildfighters were awarded $10,000 for its entry in Land and Water Challenge. After winning the first round, they were invited to compete in the second phase. This is where they won another $15,000. The Arboga Wildfighters were the only California team to win and the only sixth grade team to win. There were more than 2,300 students who participated in this nationwide. And the topic that they chose was wildfires and why are there so many wildfires in Northern California. We submitted the first challenge, I think, 2 weeks before they had the fire in Paradise. So everything just kind of fell into place, and not in a good way, naturally, but everything just kind of fell into place for these guys, and then they just ran with it. There was a lot of information out there, a lot of things for them to do, a lot of places for us to go, and they just had a really good time doing it. So now,
Hi, my name is Mary Vanek, and when doing the Lexus Eco Challenge, I learned that when you're facing a problem, you just have to learn how to grow with it and learn from it.
Hi, my name is Lucy Merrill, and I learned from the Eco Challenge that when you're faced with a problem like the Paradise Fire, you can learn and grow from it, and you can also make a better situation out of it.
Hello, my name is Nally Vu. After participating in the Lexus Eco Challenge, I've gained more confidence in my public speaking skills. It also helps motivate me to look at the causes of the major effects on the earth and living things caused by pollution.
Hi, my name is Mary Cantos, and what I learned from the Lexus Eco Challenge was to gain more confidence to speak in front of an audience.
Hi, my name is Diana Costello, and being in the Eco Challenge has helped me gain confidence and learn more about the current issues.
Hello, my name is Savannah Mexker, and I had a great adventure with this group. The Lexus Eco Challenge taught me a lot of things like our natural environmental issues.
Hi, my name is Samantha Chittenden, and I learned about the real world. I learned how to work with other people and how to speak in front of an audience. We learned so much and had so much fun with this challenge.
Hi, my name is Braden Walker, and I had a great time working with my friends.
My name is Arjun Gill, and the Lexus Eco Challenge helped me in many ways. It not only taught me how to work with others, but it also showed me the real value of time. And now we have a presentation.
guard. Guard your...
Do we have any comments from board members? Thank you. I would just like to say thank you, Mrs. Jones, and thank you, Wildfighters of Arboga. You guys did a fantastic job.
Yeah.
Great job. We do have some more seats now if somebody would like to move up and sit down. Next on our presentation is the ACE scholarship winners, Mr. Fleury.
Yes, is Mr. Jones here? And which ones did you bring with you tonight? Perfect. A little bit of background on the ACE scholarship. We've been doing that at the Exchange Club. Is a local club, been in business since 1927. And we do the Policeman of the Year banquet, which is the largest in the nation. And in 2010, we started doing the ACE scholarship, which is Achieving the Challenge of Excellence. These are students who have achieved above and beyond what normal students have to go through. This year, in the last 10 years, we have won 7 out of 10 times to represent the state of California. This year, again, we've done that, but then essays were so impressive to the panel that judged them in Santa Rosa. They said, instead of one scholarship, there's one that's going to represent the state in the national. But in the last 10 years, we've had all those winners. One winner we had won $10,000. This year, I've asked David Jones and his two to come up and read their essays to let you understand what these kids have gone through to achieve what they've achieved. And the winner this year has a good chance of winning national, which is $15,000. So, David, you want to come up and have them read their essays so you can see what they've gone through. And Mr. Jones is going to read what he did that went into the state to win for them.
Thank you, Mr. Fleury. I am extremely proud of our students for their courage to tell their story. It is two student stories that they had the courage to share, but we have a very large campus of students that come to us each quarter and each semester that share the same types of stories but don't necessarily have the courage to share it with other people. I'd like to say thank you, Southlander staff. If you could stand up just for a moment, please. Can you please give them a round of applause? Thank you. Without that wonderful staff right there, our students would not be able to conquer those hardships and achieve their goals of graduation and moving on to post-secondary education. So with that, I would like to introduce our first A scholarship winner, and this is the one that could potentially receive that national bid for $15,000 and has already won the state bid to represent the state of California for $1,300. Her name is Latavia Johnson. She was born in Stockton, California, and is the oldest of four kids. Her father was never a consistent part of her life, and her mother has done her best to provide for her kids. Latavia struggled to call a place home, as much of her childhood consisted of moving, being evicted, living with others, and trying to survive. In first grade, their family of five had to move into their grandma's house. At the time, her grandmother had already had a full house because she took in six other grandchildren. Latavia and her family moved into the garage where they lived until the fourth grade. In the fourth grade, Latavia recalls moving out of her grandma's home and into their own home. Their new home only had working electricity on one side of the home, and the roof had caved in above the kitchen. During the winter, during the winter time when it rained, water would come into the house. Her family called this place home until the sixth grade. Then they moved into an apartment in Stockton. Latavia stated that this apartment was nice because the kids finally had a room to share, and it had carpet. Unfortunately, one evening, their apartment was shot up as their family watched a movie in the living room. Her mom was nearly shot in the head, and her younger sister was grazed by a bullet on her arm. This was a traumatic experience for the entire family. They continued to live in this apartment until they had to move to Sacramento at the beginning of her eighth grade year. During that school year, she went into two different schools in two different cities. Each school and situation were totally different from one another. She states that they moved back to Stockton during the second half of her eighth grade year. The school that she enrolled in was faster paced, and she struggled to catch up in math and English. In addition to the constant changes in school and living conditions, Latavia had other obstacles. She had to ride a city bus to get to the district bus at the park, where she then was transported to school. This wore on Latavia over time, because at home she often stayed up late listening to her mother and boyfriend argue and fight. Her mom's boyfriend began drinking and fighting with more intent. Her perseverance allowed her to promote to high school. High school also was riddled with change and a lot of struggle as well, as she continued on to three different high schools in three different cities. Since being at South Lyndhurst in January, we've worked with her and her brother, who also attends South Lyndhurst High School, to make sure that transportation was not a problem, made master schedule changes to accommodate. And I am very happy to say that young lady is now a graduate, and we will honor her on Monday as a graduate of South Lyndhurst High School. And here's Miss Latavia Johnson.
My name is Latavia Johnson. I have faced many hardships in my life, and I am proud that I lived through them. I was born in Stockton, California, and I'm the oldest of four. I'm used to change and almost being homeless. In the first grade, we received our first eviction. We had to move into our grandma's house and lived in the garage. She already had six grandchildren living with her. In the fourth grade, we moved. We moved into a house that only had electricity on one side. The roof caved in the kitchen. It leaked every time it rained. We lived there for 2 years. In the sixth grade, we moved into an apartment. It was great because the kids finally had their own room, and we loved having carpet. At the end of seventh grade, our apartment was shot up. My little sister was grazed by a bullet. We were in the living room watching a movie. My eighth grade year was difficult. We moved twice to Sacramento and back to Stockton with my mom's boyfriend. I fell behind in school and rode two buses just to get to school. I was tired and distracted because when my mom's boyfriend would drink, he would argue late into the night. I worked hard and promoted to high school. I have attended three different high schools in three different cities, but I am close to graduating. I want to graduate and make my mom proud because she wasn't able to, because she had me when she was 18. Thank you.
Well, Very good.
So, thank you, Latavia.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Excuse me for interrupting you, Mr. Jones, but could we actually have a plaque for Latavia from the National Exchange Club? So, Latavia, if you could come up and accept your plaque.
Okay. Our second A scholarship winner, he also got honored for the local level. His name is Jonathan Crabtree. I first got to know Mr. Crabtree in the spring of 2018 when I visited a community day school to talk to a group of candidates for the upcoming school year. Jonathan stood out to me during that meeting because of his positive body language, his eye contact, and his great questions. I got a good feel that he was motivated, and he was truly interested in his future. It prompted me to ask more questions from his school counselor, Mr. Tarrant. I learned that Jonathan had been locked up on several occasions since the age of 15. He was validated as a Norteño gang member and was angry, unmotivated, and truly thought he would be dead by the age of 18. His mindset began to change when he found out that there was an assembly bill that would reduce credits to incarcerated youth so that he had a chance to graduate. This provided him a chance to still graduate on time if he did the right things. That summer, when he was coming to South Lyndhurst, Jonathan completed a Yuba College course and earned 10 credits on his high school transcript before stepping foot onto our campus in the fall. Jonathan's senior year at South Lyndhurst started strong. He had A's and B's in the first quarter and had perfect attendance until September 12th. This date will forever be remembered as his darkest day. On this day, Jonathan was at the wrong place at the wrong time. A student was shot at the park on his way to school. Jonathan Park is the location where students are dropped off by the city transit to go to school. Jonathan was validated earlier in his life as a potential gang member, and as a result of his past history and his location at the time when the shooting occurred, he was picked up and locked up by Yuba County Sheriff's Department. Jonathan faced a life in prison as an adult who just turned 18 6 days prior to this. This was his darkest moment in his young life. During this time, he reflected upon his life and negative choices and brought to him to this very point. He was released by the Yuba County Sheriff's Department and rolled back into South Lyndhurst in January of 2019. Jonathan has excelled as a student upon his return. He has earned 27.75 credits last quarter, 3.0 GPA, and is on track to graduate, and he will graduate. We'll honor him on Monday. He participated in our Junior Achievement Stock Exchange Challenge in Sacramento, and he's motivated to go to college and begin a new life. He acknowledges his poor choices and negative behavior in the past and does not make any excuses. And for that, I'm extremely proud of him for owning it, moving forward, and having goals and conquering despite your hardships. Mr. Jonathan Crabtree, please come up.
Well, as Mr. Jones said, my name is Jonathan Crabtree, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. I've had it rough growing up with a single mom doing everything in her power to provide for my little brother and I. She tried everything to better our lives, and I've failed her as a son up to this point, but I believe it's not too late to make her proud. I witnessed domestic abuse early in life. My dad would lie, cheat, steal, and even beat my mom right in front of me. My mom eventually left my dad, but the violent behavior I saw as a kid influenced me, and I began to get in trouble. I was always fighting, suspended, and I even eventually joined a gang. This poor decision almost cost me my life just a few months ago when I was facing life in prison for something somebody else did. I've been getting locked up since I was 15 years old. I didn't care and had no motivation when I was in juvenile hall. I actually thought I would be dead by the time I was 18. I became motivated once I was given hope by Assembly Bill 2306 that reduces credits for incarcerated youth. I've learned that you only get a few chances in life, and I think this may be my last chance to get it right. I don't want to see my mom cry through a glass window. I want to make her and my girlfriend proud because they were there during my darkest moments. I'm proud to graduate from South Lyndhurst High School on time. Thank you to Mr. Jones and all the staff members. That's it.
I think we have one more from Lyndhurst.
Oh.
There's three.
Fantastic.
Good evening. I have the pleasure of introducing Rashe Bazemore. She, like the others that you've heard, have probably every reason in the world to quit. But for that untenable reason, they had inside them a spark, a drive, a fire, a never say die, never quit attitude. And I would like you to hear her story. Rashe?
I'm kind of short, so. Hi, I'm Rashe Bazemore, and I'm going to tell you my story. It's a little bit unprofessional because I have a paper copy, but I'm the oldest of five of my siblings, and I've worked very hard during high school to get into college, and this college, I'm sorry for the unprofessionalness. I have worked very hard during high school to get into college, and would be helped. This scholarship would help to make the dream a reality. That was the beginning that I didn't take out, but I'm sorry. When I was 2 years old, I moved in with my grandmother, who eventually became my legal guardian. She also cares for my father, who suffers from organic brain disorder. My grandmother fully supports my dream for attending a four-year college, but because she has to financially support my father, my brother, and myself, she can't afford to help with the money for college. I entered this world as a premature baby with complications caused by the drug addiction of my schizophrenic mother. It was for this reason that my grandmother took me in. Although I had my grandmother to supplement the role of both parents, I never could comprehend what it felt like to have a fully functioning parent around me, or even recognize what a parent's love was really like. I had to love myself enough for the both of them. I've seen things no child should see. I've lived through things that are my normal but is another person's horror. I've heard things that have scorned itself deep into the crevice of my brain, yet I live. As a foster child that was lucky enough to be in the care of my grandmother, I lost four of my siblings to the foster care system. I was blessed enough to get my brother back in my life when my grandmother adopted him. My other three little sisters I haven't seen in years, and even if I saw them on the streets, I wouldn't recognize them. For years, I was angry and hurt, and I wanted to know why I wasn't worth loving. Did I not deserve to experience it? Why was I so easy to throw away? How I overcame it all, you ask? It's the simplest of many complicated explanations. I worked. I worked hard every day to prove I was worth something. Not to them, but to myself and other kids like me. I wanted to prove to all the kids who didn't have the fundamental support they needed growing up that they could still be somebody and weren't destined to be like their parents. If you strive for greatness, it will prevail. After birth, I should have had a brain disorder. At the age of 16, I should have had a drug addiction. At the age of 17, I should have been pregnant. Yet here I am, 18 years old, mentally stable, and accepted to my two top choices of college. Something I'm proud of is my independence and resilience. My childhood compared to my peers was always diverged. I had to learn how to be independent at a young age. I worked diligently to acquire the position I'm currently in. I struggled through arduous nights of studying, taking high-caliber courses at my high school with extracurricular activities constantly filling my schedule with no downtime, but I did it. Nevertheless, this all leads to my proudest moment, which was getting into college with little assistance while it's moving in the middle of my senior year. I've moved countless of times in my life, but this one in particular had the most complications. Graduation was right around the corner for me, and moving in the middle of the school year didn't make anything better at all. I had already taken my ACT, I was also trying to apply to college whilst also trying to balance being a new student in a different lifestyle that I was accustomed to. Being worn down from the night before of studying was a constant reality for me, but yet I still prevailed. I plan to become a pediatrician. I've always had this burning desire of wanting to help people, specifically children. I want to heal children and genuinely make them feel cared for. A lot of children are squeamish and combative, and especially after trauma, and might become anxious and have the fight or flight senses all over the place. I would like to attend college to be beyond the stereotype. As a black youth in the foster care system, but also as a woman in America, also as a woman of color in America, who is not only racially and gender disadvantaged, I push myself to do better, not only for myself, but for every little kid who doesn't know if they have what it takes to be what they want to become. That is it. Thank you.
They were, and that's why the judges, when they judged them at the state level, they said, these are so compelling. They said, we're going to put in money right now. We only could have one winner, but they gave all of them money, and this has never happened the last 10 years I've done this.
I would just like to say congratulations to all three of you and your families. Thank you. Our next presentation that we have is kind of new that we started this year. Retiree recognition for 25 years or more of service with the Marysville Joint Unified School District. Mr. Carrion is our board member is going to come down so we can shake hands. Okay, if we could all come down to the front.
I'm sure it would be fair to say they all started when they were 16, 17 years old, probably. But perhaps even more impressive is the fact that they're ending their career with just as much fervor, passion, enthusiasm than they were at any other time. All five of these retirees are working just as hard. I see that every day. I hear from them frequently, and they have all blazed a trail in one way or another. Some are still supporting the district in many ways that we wouldn't have imagined someone that was, hey, ride out into the sunset, relax, get in a rocking chair, go to the beach, go to the pool, whatever. And they're eager to leave this place a better place as they worked hard to create in their respective departments, respective positions, or their schools in general. Including Dr. Starkey, who has worked incredibly hard, in my opinion, these last few years to ensure that the legacy, as these others have, continues on. And that, again, to me, it's very impressive that they're working just as hard in their last year. But to that end, we have a little gift, a little token for each of these, and we'd like to have them come up and be recognized by the board. Karen Moore. Karen Moore, longtime teacher at McKinney School. full-time teacher at multiple sites, including McKinney School. Allison Hasty. Longtime district employee, Kathy Cartwright. You guys kind of well like it, Kovalev. We'd probably rather be listening to the A's game right now, but we want to recognize Doug Eshman. And then, of course, our final honoree, having held various teaching positions, administrative positions, site and district, and that's our very own superintendent, Dr. Starkey.
So the last time I'm going to say it, there's plenty of seating up front. Next, we have comments from the board members. Ms. Scott.
I'd like to say, first of all, thank you all so very much for coming out to support your cause. To the students that we did get a chance to hear from, I would just like to say a special thank you for representing our school district. And I want to tell you to never let your past define your future. I'm very, very proud of you all. I'm very happy of the fact that We have such fine representatives in our school district to help you get to your next step. And I wish you so very, very well in the future to come. Take care.
Mr. Davis.
Yeah, I'd like to just go over a few things that we've been doing with the safety committee. I passed out a detailed list of what we've been up to. Jeff Boom and I are on the safety committee, and we've been very fortunate to have Jolie, I always say her name wrong, and she has, she's a real innovative and very important person in the district for the safety program that's going on. She has really done some community outreach that has just made it a lot easier to talk about some things that we really don't want to think about. So the thing that's, we went over was the safety plans that are both in the district and at the school sites. Those are being reviewed, and where needed, updates. The Yuba County Sheriff's Department has stepped up, and they've actually had one of their sergeants actually visit each and every one of the campuses to go over their safety plans and to make sure that they are at least considering some things that maybe they hadn't thought of. But most of the campuses have very different, challenging needs that are going to take some time to get some attention to. But some of the things we did come up with that are probably a lot easier to get to on a, you know, hopefully starting next term. But they have discovered they need window tinting, which helps give the staffs some leeway, some time, if something, God forbid, happens. They've also talked about making sure each classroom has a first aid kit and a tourniquet kit. They've also gone and each classroom having a fire extinguisher. Some of this stuff is trivial, but what we found is not all classrooms have this equipment. And so we're working on each one of the schools are going and reviewing what their needs are and trying to fill those needs. But they're reviewing the escape plans, and one of the big ones that they want to have more coverage on is the walkie-talkies, so that all the administrators have a way to communicate when they're away from a telephone. And then the last thing is monitoring social media. That's everybody's job. It's not just one person. And it's very important for the community to just be aware of when somebody's hurting and that somebody needs some attention. So it's been very enlightening to review the campuses. I've only been to a few, but the principals and the teachers at these campuses are very dedicated to protecting their children. And I believe, given the community, we are in a better place. So, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allison. Mr. Boom. Mr. Fleury. Mr. Crawford.
Yes, just a few. It's kind of an emotional night today, a melancholy evening, saying not goodbye, but congratulations on your retirement. Doug Eshman not only put up with my 5- and 8-year-old daughter and son, he was enlightened enough in his beginning of his career to talk me into being his site council president for 3 years running. And just an amazing man, and the district is really going to miss him. Two more teachers that taught my son and daughter at middle school, and now they're retiring again. And I'd be remiss without mentioning my good friend Kathy Cartwright, who never ever had a complaint or misgiving when I came and asked for any questions, and was always there and always number one. And last, but certainly not least, Dr. Gay Starkey, who not only had to put up with me 36 years in teaching, but three consecutive terms on the board. Thank you very much, Gay. I mean that. And then quickly, our service clubs over the last two weekends have been amazing. And we've alluded to Mr. Fleury's service clubs and what the great things they did tonight. The Key Club that kids from Lyndhurst and Marysville High School participated in, our fishing derby for the Kiwanis. I got such a great response from the Rotary Club in Marysville when they presented us at the last meeting with that beautiful van from Marysville High School. And sometimes I think we're remiss in not realizing just what these service clubs do. Mrs. Hastie, what all she's done with music in our schools. She was there at Kynock when my granddaughter, and I talked about my kids, my granddaughter started playing the violin. She also worked with getting the violins donated and brought music back to our schools. She's a tremendous musician and artist, and she'll be missed too. That's enough reminiscing. Thank you very much.
So I do have a couple items. Board members, you found at your seat the graduation schedule. Double check, make sure that's appropriate or accurate that you signed up for those. And the second form that you found at your seat was actually the special board meetings that we're going to be taking a look at during June. One of the ones I would want to point out is the June 18th board session. Right now it has a 3 o'clock p.m. time frame on it, and that's kind of a tentative time. So just to make sure you can get things on your calendar for those special board meetings and a couple of regular special or regular board meetings that we have, so you can get it on your calendar. So Mr. Allison and Mr. Crawford and I are on the auditorium committee to explore different options with regards to partnerships, if there's anything that we could maybe do with the Marysville Auditorium. We had our first meeting with staff back on March 4th, and we have our second meeting scheduled tomorrow at 2 o'clock to carry on that conversation. Do we have anybody? We had a third district goal of building strong bonds between community and schools. Is there anyone that was on that committee to? No? Okay. So one other comment that I had, I had the opportunity to go on a field trip with Amber Watson to a couple of our director of nutritional services to a couple of our sites to take a look at the nutritional programs. We visited Yuba Gardens and Ellis School, and it is truly amazing how much effort goes into preparing the food for our students, not only from a food standpoint, but training our kids or teaching our students respect and how to get along with other folks in those lines and how to respect the site. It's amazing the system that our nutritional services folks have set up for getting kids through the lines. I think at Yuba Gardens it was 12 minutes for break time that kids could have on our minimum days. I think it's 7 minutes. Luckily we were there on a 12 minute day to see all the kids come in and get their food and things you don't even realize because they have breakfast, break, and then lunch, but students can actually have a lunch and one of the two of the other breakfast or break. You can't have all three of them. And we're actually even trying to teach them more about nutrition. They have to have an X item and a Y item in order to make sure that they're going to be eating healthy. So that's the middle school. Then we went to visit Ellis School, and we were there during the kindergarten time. And to be able to see kindergartners go through a salad bar line is truly, truly amazing. I must say it was a little louder in the cafeteria with the kindergartners than it was with the 7th and 8th graders. But even to have the kindergartners use tongs to be able to get the mandarins out of the bowl, which I'm sure I would have just reached in there and grabbed one myself, but making sure that they're doing things appropriate. So all the folks that help out in our nutritional services, I truly take my hat off to you for everything that you do. Okay, next, opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Almost the last one. I have a slideshow presentation for you, but there's also an item that's on your agenda tonight that it's kind of alluded to in my presentation, and that's about the PD days on this coming June, right after school gets out. Apparently, you're just now voting on whether or not to authorize that. It's $10,000 for 2 days of Maria Nielsen. People only very recently heard about it, being able to register for it, and many of us have been told that if we go, we can't get paid. And it's a whole lot of issues all balled up into one big mess, this whole PD thing. Little pieces of it are in my presentation here. And I titled my presentation, Did You Know? Because on varying levels throughout the district, I think that there are people who don't know who need to know, who think they know, but they don't really. I'll be getting into more detail on each of the items that you see on this first page. Teachers have lost income over the past 14 years. They make less now than they did 14 years ago. It costs $10,584 to not have insurance. Every time insurance goes up, board members who have the insurance and our superintendent get an increase. At sometimes that increase is $300 a month. This coming year, it's about 50. I'm going to share with you things that you can get with $28,596. I'm going to share with you better ways to spend $405,000. I'm going to show you the indicator from your own numbers that teachers have become a lower priority as time goes by here in this district. I would like to make sure you understand that schools are not for profit. And there's a surprise. There are more funds than you expected. Again. And I'm going to share what's happening with bargaining. Since 2005, our insurance cost has increased by $21,552 a year. Teachers take home $3,479 less than they did 14 years ago. The average salary increase since 2005 is $18,073. But the increase in insurance cost is $21,552. So if you subtract what we on average gained from what we all lost, you get $3,479 less. We have a new opt-out. You can refuse to have insurance through the district if you have other insurance with a spouse. There's more detail, but you don't need to know that. A teacher who opts out of insurance has to pay $10,584 a year It's not very appealing if you're a new teacher and you want to come to this district and you're looking over the benefits and you think, oh, my husband with PG&E has got great insurance. So I don't need the insurance. I'll opt out. Okay, well, that's $99 a month this year and $125 next year. You guys can fix this. You can help us get language that says that our insurance cap will at least cover the opt-out. It's called opt-out with an administrative fee. The administrative fee should be paid by you guys and not the person that's not getting insurance. Kind of good. So the board member benefit, I like to call it, but it's also for our superintendent, our current one, not relevant next year, has increased from $587 per month in 2005 to the current $2,383 per month. And when we come every year and we talk about how bad the insurance cost going up has affected us, anybody on that board that's taking the insurance to the district can't possibly know what that feels like. Because you don't have to pay more every time it goes up. There was a time before 2005 when the cap covered Plan 1A fully and then some. People got $70 back. So right now, the cost to insure one person is $28,596 per year. And I wanted to share a few things that you can buy with $28,596. This is rough. Like I didn't put sales tax in and stuff, okay? But you can buy a Canadian island for that much. The weather's not good all the time. You can buy a new car. There's some land in Grass Valley. Actually looks really cool. But yeah, it's for sale. It's less than $28,000 right now. There's this beautiful house in Salisbury, North Carolina. Probably has all kinds of issues, but you know, and it's cheaper there. But $28,000. This one's funny. Three mechanical pencils for every student and teacher in our district. 16 MacBook Pro laptops on sale. A laminator for every teacher. This time of year, certificates. Oh my goodness, we could use a laminator. You can buy tuition for 4 years of college. And you can buy 5 days with Maria Nielsen. If you have $405,000, you can get 10 months with Maria Nielsen. Because that's what this board approved. Oh, wait. You approved and spent $395,000. Tonight, on your agenda, you have another $10,000 for 2 days in June with her. I hope that gets pulled from the consent agenda and you rethink that. Here are some things that your district can buy with $405,000. You could increase our insurance cap by $70 a month. You can buy 45 mechanical pencils for every teacher and student in the district. 240 MacBook Pro laptops. Tuition scholarships for 60 MJUSD graduates. You can buy a superintendent and two assistant superintendents at entry-level rates, of course. You could buy professional development based on the needs determined within our teams. You have... You have invested so much money in the PLC process, and we are with you. We want to do the professional learning communities. We want to do right by our students and do the best we can, but we are all very different. If you'll notice in this slide, there's music teachers, speech pathologists, nurses, librarians, science teachers, counselors, and that bottom one's little kindergartners who aren't good with the salad bar. And they all need different kinds of training. And we're the best ones to be able to say, here's what I need. I teach kindergarten in my team.
Those two ladies back there. Boy, where'd the other one go? There she is.
We decided we wanted to go to a kindergarten conference because every time we have professional development, we get told, yeah, well, it's different in kindergarten. Just have them draw a picture. Like they're all artists or something. They don't know how to draw yet either. And we have an agreement to do this. That's being violated right now. I've submitted a grievance and all that there, but I really need your support, guys, and Miss Scott. It only makes sense that if you're going to have teachers come together in a professional learning community and meet every Wednesday and come together and say, you know what? None of us are really getting this part right here. There have got to be strategies that work. Let's see if we can find something. I thought he was going to tell me my time was up. And we should be able to, that team, go to our principal and say, hey, this is what we'd like to do. What do you think? And then do it. Because nobody needs 2 days in June with Maria Nielsen. Here's that teachers becoming a lower priority thing. So priorities, when you do your budget at your house, I bet mortgage, credit cards if you got them, those kinds of things, high priority. You're going to make sure you can pay them. The things you pay the most on, the things you value the most. Well, back in 2007, our salaries, teachers, was 39% of the budget. When Mr. Flurry was still teaching, it was like 42% of the budget. This last year is 36% of the budget. We become a lesser and lesser priority as time goes on. And then we get told that we don't know how to pick professional development by ourselves. We can possibly know what we need. Some of you sitting up there have seen this slide before. Long time ago, back in 2010, I presented this. And this wasn't my first attempt. I had brought up a graph of the ending fund balance because I was amazed. It had gone from about $4 million to $11 million. And every time I would talk about the ending fund balance, this young man wasn't here, but we've had various people in that seat, back and forth and back and forth, who said, oh, but restricted. Oh, but the designated, you have to keep it reserved, right? So I divided it all up. And look at 2010-11. That bottom dark blue, that's what you have to keep. Like, you have to have that in reserve. That little tiny thing on the top, that's restricted. All that light blue in between, that's the unrestricted, not part of the reserve from 2010-11. And $11 million. The taxpayers at that time were expecting those funds to go toward the education of students that were here that year. We are not for profit. Since then, you see that tiny little blue one on the left? That's that $11 million one from 2010-11. It's gone up quite a bit. Oh, we're deficit spending. Oh, my, my. And yet, the end of the year keeps having more and more in that ending fund balance. You approved this year's budget to have $35,151,500 left over. That is $30,741,381 more than the ending balance of 2004. It's not a savings account. Here's that part where you guys have more funds than expected. Cost of living hurts a lot. And so there's this thing called the cost of living adjustment, which is 3.26%. The cost of CalSTRS, everybody's been all freaked out about it. Well, it's decreased. It's not going to be as much as you thought. It's down by 1.43%. And our teacher salaries this year didn't cost you as much as you thought. You guys were off by $1.2 million. So because retirees, you know, people that hiring younger, less experienced folks to come, our unit saved you $1.2 million. And by the way, that picture is actually us, our teachers, not today. Another fun day we were here. So here's the math. $1.2 million is equal to 2.74%. The COLA is 3.26%. The STRS adjustment is 1.43%. So you could easily give us a 7.39% increase. Because the cost of living adjustment, that is not a raise. That is, things got more expensive. And you're not paying for things getting better with our insurance, and things keep getting more expensive for us. So here's what's happened with bargaining. We didn't ask for 7 or 8 or whatever percent. The district offered 2% on our salary schedule. And they offered a 2% one-time off schedule, which I think everybody refers to as the bonus. Because you get a bonus and boom, that's done. And they offer to cap our hourly rate. Yeah, I told them nobody was going to go for that, because that's just saying, yeah, your hours don't count that much anymore. $5,000 a day for Maria Nielsen, but you guys, you don't get any more per hour than what you've been getting. We countered 4% ongoing. You obviously have 4%. It says so right there. And leave the cap alone on the hourly rate. It's based on, I believe it's the third column, 12th step, makes what the hourly rate is. And so if that goes up, the hourly rate goes up. But that's because if our value goes up, our value goes up. So when we countered with 4%, the district came back and countered back with 2% ongoing, 2% bonus. So next, I'm trying to figure out how not to go into impasse, because this coming month is my last month being president, and I just want to go. There's other reasons, too, but I just want to get this done. And we're all going to meet on Thursday after school. The bargaining team is going to be meeting with your team on my therapy day. I'm really hoping that you guys can give your team some guidance to improve this offer. Because I can't believe... I can't believe that any of that came from you. Whoops. Uh-oh. So here's my summary. Teachers are not able to keep up with the cost of living when the district doesn't share the burden. The district's actions show more value for consultants than respect for its employees. We do have employees who, for very cheap, are willing to do professional development for their colleagues. Throughout the years, the district neglects to spend taxpayer dollars on the students for which the funds were intended. You, the board, can direct the district's team to make a reasonable offer, cover the cost to opt out of insurance, and increase the salary by 4%.
Thank you, Inga. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Public comments. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card. Before the start of the meeting, give it to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this time, during this section of the agenda, or ask they be heard during the specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph M. Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states no action or discussion shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of a legislative body or its staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posted by persons exercising their public testimony under rights under Section 54954.3. We do have 3 public comment cards. It looks like 2 are with regards to one item or one category. So our first public comment would be Adina Kasky. Adina, when you come to the microphone, please state your name. I would like to make a comment. There is a timer that you'll see, and we are restricted to, I guess I'm looking over here, you're up here. We are restricted to 3 minutes. I would request that you to be finished in those 3 minutes, or we will turn the microphone off and then proceed. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. My name is Adina Kasky, and I'm a parent of 2 kiddos in the district. I have... a student at MCAA, and I have another student, another son, who is at Edgewater Elementary. And we moved here a little over a year ago. My husband's stationed at Beale Air Force Base. We did not get a choice about moving here. We were just told we were coming. And when a military family moves, we hold our breath for a lot of things. Where are we going to live? Where are children going to go to school? All of those things. So we held our breath. And we got here in this district, and we didn't know how it was going to go. But after a few weeks of my kids being in school, I breathed a huge sigh of relief. We have amazing teachers. You all serve absolutely amazing teachers. I could sit up here and tell you how my children have succeeded, but I won't spend the time bragging on them or your teachers. They speak for themselves. They're amazing people. So I'm here actually to encourage you as a school board to keep supporting your families and your students by supporting your teachers. And I'm here to ask you to do that in one specific way. I want to ask you to ask a lot of questions and listen to the teachers and administrators in your schools. They know our kiddos. They teach them. They have them day in and day out. And therefore, they have their fingers on the pulse of the educational needs in our community. And I have a couple specific ways you could possibly do that. When a school says they need more classrooms, I would beg of you, work hard to get them built on the earliest day possible. Question every budget item. I'm going to use my time. Don't clap. question every budget item. Just because we spent money one way last year and it was good doesn't mean you automatically need to spend it the same way this year. If a school says they need a counselor for their students, get them one. If a school wants to operate a school-wide program in their initial year of Title I funding, grant them that authorization. Your teachers and your principals are hard-working people. And the best way that you can serve my kiddos and every other kiddo in this district is to spend our taxpayer money on our kids and pay our teachers.
Thank you. I think the next one is Michelle Jones. Sorry if it's not there. Is that your name, Michelle?
Michelle Jones.
Okay, thank you.
Just another Jones.
Okay.
So my name is Michelle Jones. I have a daughter in Edgewater Elementary School. This is her second year. She's in first grade. When she came to the school, she could read a little bit, but it wasn't very good. And through the library, through the AR program, it's really developed her. She wants to read for her little brother now. She can actually read all the sentences, sound out the words, do a lot of things that she couldn't do before. And so I am, as a parent, concerned when I hear that perhaps the library will be closed because it's been a big beneficial thing for our family. I don't want that to be lost. And hearing that the bids are opened again for our school getting new buildings and pushed back on timing, that's very worrisome. And so I hope you guys will pay attention to that and hopefully have things done before the start of the next school year so that people are not sharing rooms, they're not closing the library, and things are not a little bit chaotic. I'm part of the PTO team there as well because I do want to be involved in my child's everyday life at the school. So I also hear, and the good communication between the staff and the principal and the parents is great. But when they are worried about things, that sends a red flag to me. I get worried that we're spending money on PE things when we cannot even get benches for our children to sit on at the school. So please take into account your budget again and try to get things that are actually beneficial for our students, because that's really important. And that's about it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next, we have Jackie McComb.
Hi, I'm Jackie McComb. I've been one of your teachers for over 25 years, and I'd like to tell you that I was appalled by signing up Maria Nielsen for $405,000. I don't know that you know what you're getting for your money. We filled out a survey, and just about everyone at my school and our level were saying, no way, but you know what? We never saw the results of our survey. So I got this email, and I'm a real get-along girl. I've never spoken to you. I've never complained. But this is what you're getting for your money. I have learned nothing in 2 years of Maria Nielsen. Nothing. The first time we meet in there, me, a teacher of 24, 25 years, heard, let's make our standards butterflies, rocks, and boulders. I am a grown adult. So then when she started talking about, let's prioritize our standards, I gave it to her. We had done that 2 years ago. Gave it to her. Then she says, well, how about a calendar? I gave her the whole written calendar. And here's what we got to do that whole day that I was out of the classroom, away from my students who I am passionate about. She said, well, how about we plot out next year? That is what you are paying $405,000 for. And yet, you don't even want to cover the teacher's cost of living? I am paying over $1,600 a month for insurance out of my paycheck. And I don't have a choice on that because I need the insurance. I'm obviously not really young, having taught for you for 25 years. I don't feel valued. I felt insulted when this woman told me to look at my standards as butterflies, rocks, and boulders. And I had already done every single bit of it because I am a talented employee. Because I was prepared. There's never been a year I've gone into that has not been plotted out and I did not know what I was doing. That is what you're getting for $405,000. And no one bothered to ask us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next on the agenda is the superintendent's report. Dr. Starkey.
First of all, I'd like to start with having Mr. Rick Teagarden come up and give us an update on the superintendent search for Marysville Joint Unified School District.
Thank you, Dr. Starkey, and congratulations on your award tonight and your tenure and best wishes in the future of the things that you have planned to do. Is pretty exciting, I'm sure. Kind of a short report, and probably none of it will be a surprise to any of the board members because you've all attended a variety of meetings throughout the Marysville Joint Unified School District attendance area, and you've heard a lot of these comments, but I haven't given it to the entire board at one time, and so this is just an opportunity to catch you up as to what has been going on and what is planned through your superintendent search. And I want to thank each one of you for all of your participation, to coming to the meetings, your interviews, all of the openness that you've had in hearing what community members have to say, and for staying truly open to the process of trying to find the very best superintendent to lead your district and into the future. The deadline for the applications has passed, and they are now closed. You have seven good applicants that have completed all of the requirements for an interview, at least a paper screening with the Board of Trustees. As you know, all of the activities by your board policy are done in closed session, and so the paper screening is the next thing that takes place, and that's, I think, it's you have a calendar in front of you of when those activities will happen. We've had multiple community forums, and in those community forums,
they maybe were not as attended as with as many citizens and school folks as we would like, but we've gathered more than 200 comments from the community and from teaching staff and from different folks that will help us to build the screening process and the interview questions for your applicants. Many of the things, some of the things that you heard tonight have been voiced in other ways and at different times, and so all of those kinds of things will be fed into the questioning strategies that you can use with the applicants. And just also remind you that everything we do is in closed session, which means that you don't have the ability to share the conversations or even the candidates that have applied at this point in time. On the application and the applicants as they applied, they said that we assured them that we would keep it confidential until the point that we begin doing the background and the reference checks. And so we need to honor that with each of the applicants. The paper screening is June 4th. So you have it on your calendar there. It's a special closed session meeting, and we have a process that we've designed in order for you to read all of the applicants. You'll have a chance to read and review all of them that we've received, and we'll score them and come to a consensus of who you would like to actually have the invite for the interviews. All of seven of the applicants have been contacted, and they've given the dates for them to save the dates and the times. So if they are selected for an interview or the next level of questioning, that they would be available, and all seven have agreed to those dates being available to the trustees for that process. The first interview, after you've completed your paper screening, we contact those that you would like to interview. The first interview will begin on June 11th at 10:30 in the morning. And we're allowing about an hour plus for each applicant, and we're asking the questions that have been developed for that first set of interviews has been based on the 200 statements that we have gathered throughout the community forums and by talking to each one of you and to reading your board policies and what you've listed in your applications, so that the applicants should not be real surprised as to the kinds of questions that we're asking. And so it'll be an opportunity for you to listen carefully, to screen, to score, and to make decisions if any of those applicants from the first round of interviews are ready to go on to a second interview. The second interview is June 14th at 10:30 also. On that interview, we'll be going into a little more depth. The questions that we've developed will be a lot more critical in many of the ways, and much more specific in finance and transportation and food service and much more detailed kinds of questions, so that you can find if the person is truly skilled and has the skills and talents and knowledge in order to be your superintendent. As we've shared in the past, we made a list of the skills that a superintendent needs in order to lead a district as large as yours, and I just brainstormed about 76 different skills. You're going to have a very difficult time finding anyone that has all of those skills. And so how you work with that person, the goals you set, the guidance you give them, the support you give them, the encouragement, the training, the lifelong learning attitudes that they have are going to be extremely important to you as you continue to move forward. The third interview is June 18th. And we've tentatively scheduled 3 o'clock, but you may need a lot more time than that, so the time is very flexible as far as we'll set that time later to see if you have been able to narrow the applicants down to less than 7 at that point in time, and we're hoping that you certainly will be able to do so. If you need a community visit into the applicant's community, it'll be scheduled about that time, about the 18th. Of the month as well. One day or two before or after that point in time is what we're planning to do for you. The fourth interview is on June 20th. It seems like a lot of interviews, but as we've talked and as you've directed me, this is the most important decision that you're going to make in the foreseeable future. This is such an important position to lead your district and to be able to implement the plans and the goals that the Board of Trustees and your staff identify that you're trying to move the district forward towards. And so the fourth interview is an important interview as well. And it's I've set it up for 5 o'clock on the 20th, and I've set it up as a dinner meeting, a little bit more of a social interaction, an opportunity to have a little more dialogue from a different point of view without so many scripted questions as we're having in the other interviews. And in that time, I'm encouraging the applicant to interview you and to make some decisions if you are the kind of trustees that they can work with, that they can trust, that they want to work with and support and be a part of your team. That's an important part. I mean, the superintendent, they're not just looking for a job. They're just like you. They want to make a difference as well. And in order to make a difference, they have to have a board of trustees that knows how to work together to support them, to encourage them, and to give them the guidance and the trust and the authority that they need, even during difficult decisions. And there will be plenty of difficult decisions that will have to be made now and in the foreseeable future. The date for the board to make a motion to discuss and to set the contract for this person is a public meeting on June 25th. That's going to be an important time for you. Hopefully, as you go through the process, you're going to get more narrow the candidates down from 7 to something much less than that by the 25th. At that point in time, you'll have a motion, you have a second, you have discussion, and then hopefully you'll be able to, you'll take a vote. That could be a complicated thing for you, because if you have more than one applicant there, and you don't elect the first person then you have to have it go through that process again with another person, or however many you end up having at that point in time. My desire is by then you get to one on that night, and that there will be a complete consensus on the board, because you have really vetted that person really well, and you really have great confidence that that person can lead the district and work with this board of trustees. And so prior to that meeting, your attorney, Mr. Gant, and I will have a contract that reflects your agreement with the proposed superintendent, and hopefully they will have said, yes, if I'm selected, this is a contract that I would agree to, so that you will then approve the applicant as your superintendent, and you'll also approve a contract for service. At the end of that, that ends the process for us. It ends everything with the exception of a celebration and a party and introducing your superintendent to your community and to help them to prepare for the interactions and the discussions and the meetings that they're going to have with you as you try to set goals for the superintendent and agree upon the evaluation process, and those are all exciting things, and that's why you're elected throughout the community to do those kinds of things. So I've rambled a little bit here, but I just if you have any questions or comments, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
Yeah, Mr. Teagarden, at what point would the board see the contract? And does the board have any input on any of the parameters of the contract?
Well, everything dealing with the superintendent and the contract is board approved. There is nothing that is not approved by the Board of Trustees. Your attorney, you've directed your attorney to begin that process, and so Mr. Gant has begun working on that contract, real similar to the ones that are out there that you currently have, maybe a few adjustments in that. When you get to about the third interview, Mr. Gant and I will begin meeting with the applicants and talk about compensation and those kinds of things in it, and if there's any other portions of the contract that they cannot accept, then you'll have an opportunity to make those adjustments at that point in time. Hopefully, we'll have a contract that would be agreeable to both the board and the applicant before the June 25th meeting. Even though you won't take any formal action or anything, it is part of the closed session discussions and things that you can have in the hiring process.
So, Mr. Teagarden, if I could just add to that, on June 4th, you'll notice there's, for the board members, there's two items there, and the first item is consideration approval of the proposed non-economic. So Mr. Gant is going to be here to go over that contract with us on that day.
Yeah. And I would say I have had the opportunity to look at the contract, and I believe that you're going to find it very and a superintendent that's going to want to work for you, I believe that they're going to feel like it's a very fair, equitable contract that gives them the authority to do what they need to do and the support they need to move forward. And the only thing that has not discussed in that contract, from my perspective, is salary and compensation.
So I would like to just point out also for the board members on the June 11th time, it's going to be in the conference room upstairs, room 204, just so we don't get lost. It's up in the corner. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments? Mr. Teagarden, I really thank you for helping us in this process.
My pleasure. Thank you for your confidence.
Dr. Starkey.
And at long last, Travis Barnett is here, waiting patiently to do his quarterly report on the routine restricted maintenance activities, the RRMA.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen of the board, and Dr. Starsky. So we are going to head and kick this off since we do this every quarter. We'll kind of start out here. Work orders generated in the last 4 months, 1,046 of those work orders, 668 were closed. Now that we're ending towards fiscal year, there was 3,244 work orders generated, of which 2,520 have been closed out. So summertime, we got a little catch up to do, but we'll get there. Projects completed in the last 4 months. A lot of the things were going around. We're still doing tree trimming. A lot of that was neglected for many years. So we're out there looking at a lot of low-hanging branches and things like that. Connex boxes are a big thing in a lot of sites. They're needing extra storage, so we're working with sites to get those in. A lot of painting going on. A lot of district-wide sewer maintenance, carpet replacements, roof leaks and repairs. Just a lot of your routine maintenance stuff that we're trying to keep up with day-to-day. You'll notice that we're still going through the district and we're looking at a lot of dry rot. You'll see examples of what we're pulling off on a lot of portables and different buildings. The one in the center is just kind of an example of what our maintenance staff is able to do on their own. That's their own skill work there. Linda Kitchen, they had a sewer backup. Sewer main actually collapsed and break underneath their kitchen last month. So, again, our plumber of our maintenance and operations department were able to jackhammer that up. They obviously had to close down the kitchen. It was kind of a big deal. But you'll see on the right there the patch. That is a quick patch due to the fact that we had to get that kitchen up and running immediately. We did some... Breaker replacements, that is one here at the district office that went down a couple months ago. If you guys remember, all the phones went down and everything else like that. So around the district, this is kind of an example of things we're up against. Many of our electrical panels need to be upgraded. We were fortunate enough to have something overnighted to us, but that one panel, that one breaker was very hard to get because it's original. We went ahead and repaired the roof. We repaired and replaced some of the wood over there at the print shop. Now there's some pictures of the dry rot that was underneath there. That thing was leaking for many, many, many years. So they were able to pull the tiles off, fix the dry rot, put the tiles back on.
Did you, I'm just really curious because I watch you guys do it. Did you put the old tiles back on or did you get new tiles?
Nope, those are the original tiles.
Oh,
those are
great.
From Vida McBean, so whenever we do any type of work on these buildings, they're actually very sought after, so we put them off to the side and make sure they go back on.
That was my one question. Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Of course.
You.
Current facilities projects going right now. We have the Lyndhurst High School C building up in the upstairs. We've begun construction with Kids Construction. He's framing in all those open classrooms up there and installing doors. So we're hoping to get that completed within the next couple of weeks. Students and staff can be very, very thrilled that that's happening over there. So I'm sure they'll give you a thank you on that one. Lyndhurst Culinary, we are getting close to the end of this project now. We are shooting for a June 10th Division State Architect closeout. Then hopefully following that, we'll get that equipment installed also in June. There's a couple pictures in there. You'll see the new fire posts in there. We had to do some ADA upgrades to the staff restrooms to hit compliance with DSA. Edgewater, this one here, obviously we went out redid a bid walk May 24th, which was completed. We're hoping to have the bid openings on June 4th, which is pending, and a bid award somewhere around June 6th. Construction starting in June, if all goes well. At this point, don't foresee anything, but I'm not a fortune teller, but everything seems to be tracking as of now.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
For consideration, I also have put down a timeline, just for clarification for anybody who wants to see from the start of this project of when we actually kicked this thing off of September 2018. It just kind of gives a play-by-play of the process as we move forward trying to get this building on track. We were tracking up until the point that there was a bid protest, and you'll see that through these dates you can see each month there was some movement on this. So, again, June 4th on that bid opening, we'll know what lowest bids come in at, and we can award after that, after we've ensured that everything's been covered.
Is there a chance that the June construction starts? Are we looking forward to having it done by the start of school in August?
You know, I can honestly tell you that we're pushing everything that we can to get this on track. There's two things that still have to coincide. Is we still have American Modular System, which we purchased the building from. So that is a whole other entity. So once we award to the contractor, those two have to talk. So American Modular System and the contractor have to get together. And that's when I can set a final date to where we'll know as a district what that is. Being that we missed the first deadline with American Modular Systems, with the campfire, all the destruction up there, every modular building company and contractor is up there. So there was a very fine window that we had to get our building put in once we missed that deadline with the bid walk. I contacted American Modular Systems and talked to one of their representatives. Their representatives have ensured me that they will squeeze us in this summer, but again, that's a handshake deal. So hopefully once we award that lowest bid, we can get a firmed up date. But until then, I just got to roll with the punches on that one, so to speak.
Thank you, Travis.
Mm-hmm. Travis, I'd like to ask, was there a previous date of completion that was given out to anyone?
The date of completion was always pushed for the beginning of the school year, of this coming school year after the summer in August. That was a very hard deadline to hit regardless. The idea was to, at that point, almost have a phase one and phase two of Edgewater. The idea was to be able to have occupancy for students and staff at the beginning of school, which means that the site work would probably follow after, being that we could kind of keep that off the campus. So the goal is to continue, while I'm talking with contractors and with American Modular Systems, to keep that date for occupancy. But it is a far stretch at this point, but we're going to do everything in our power to push this thing. All contractors that are bidding on it understand the push for this building to be in. So everybody's aware that at any cost, we're going to keep this thing rolling. And I've got a lot of people on board that say they're going to try to make the impossible possible.
Do you know what that date of completion was previously?
Not on the top of my head. I believe it was, we just kind of set it before August 14th, if I do recall.
That was the figure that I remember.
Right.
Or the date, rather.
So, Mr. Barnett, I see that we're June 6th. It says we're going to award the lowest bid. We would need to, between the June 4 bid opening, that's plenty of time for us to be able to make those decisions, to try to have a special board meeting, or are we looking as a board to maybe say it's okay if we ratify that contract, or is a pleasure of the board to have a meeting on maybe June 7th, which would be even a day after this award. We would have to schedule another special board meeting for that. Is there a pleasure of the board?
Well, we know we'll have the bids, and it'll all be done by June 6th. And is that a guarantee?
That is the schedule. So there is no way around the bid opening. They will be opened on June 4th. I think with my colleagues, we all want to vet the process to ensure that the lowest bid has met every bit of the criteria, that there is no lapse in insurance. There's just that everything is as it should be on the bid opening. So we will know the lowest bid on the 4th.
In the event, say, just as a drawn analogy, like the welding bid, if there's only one bid, are we still going to go with that one bid?
Yeah, if there was only one bid, then that's the lowest bid. So, again, the board has the choice of throwing out all bids and re-advertising.
Sure.
Or we accept the low bid, low bidder, and we award. And we can either, like you said, have a special board meeting or ratify it.
Thank you, sir.
So my last question. Mm-hmm. This report that we have, it seems that, was there something that we gave to the Hill Democrat in March or April that was going to be completed? Was that already put out to the public? Do you recall that date?
I don't recall the date that the appeal went out when that article was written. But I know that at that point we were very hopeful that we were going to hit some deadlines. So I'm not quite sure about when that article actually went out, dates on that. But I know it was in the process of us trying to get this thing moving along. Again, this was a lot of work put into a very tight timeline, and we kind of knew going into this if we had any road bumps, kind of so to speak, it was going to set this behind. So the fact that we've only had kind of one, I know it sounds horrible, is actually very, very surprising, and I think we can get through it. It's just the fact of, like I said, once we get that low bid and letting AMS talk to that contractor to give us a real finite date, that is what I can report to everybody and let them know this is where we're at.
My last question, I hope, is that so at the beginning of the school year, we're going to try to have this project completed so that there will not be any interference. Is that correct? Is that what you're telling me?
The intent is, in all intents and purposes, it is to get that building operational by then. If that can happen, it's a stretch at this point. In the event that it doesn't happen, I've been meeting with stakeholders, the site administrator, Mr. Hodson, and kind of coming up with a plan B. What that looks like right now isn't at a point to share with everybody, but there are different avenues we can go to kind of accommodate, hopefully, to in the event that this doesn't get done by the start of school. At this point, we have, in my opinion, no choice but to move forward with this because we've purchased the building, it's built, and we need to get it installed regardless. If it's past the August deadline, we still have to get it in. So we know that even if it's August, September, pushing it out to October, no matter what, that building's coming in. So if we have a 90-day period to which we have to accommodate students and staff, we'll have to put together an action plan for that.
Well, through the chair, plan B is done before August.
Yeah.
Through the chair, yeah. Then, if I may, and I didn't mean it. Were you done?
No, I was just asking.
Sorry.
Saying that I hope that our plan B will be completed by August so that there will not be any interference with the students returning back to school and any inconvenience for the staff at Edgewater as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. And absolutely, once we get that finite detail from AMS and the lowest bidder, then we'll be able to realize, you know, we'll be able to put into motion if there's an action plan needed or if our contractor and our building supplier says we can do it. So,
if I might add, as the board might recall, about 2 months or so ago, we had briefed the board that the intention at that time was to bring the board a ratification for the last time we went up for the bid. And I'd respectfully ask that we go with that same route because we're going to do the bid opening on the 4th. It may be very non-controversial. It may be that the lowest bidder is clearly responsive, and we could conceivably get that moving very quickly. Or we could have a situation like we did the last time in which the lowest bidder was non-responsive, and then that sets a whole bunch of other legal things in effect. So I don't know how many days we would need, and I would just respectfully, if it pleases the board, that we just trust us to award to the lowest responsive bidder in accordance with law, and then that'll buy us a day or two, which may not be a lot, but we're trying to do everything we can.
I was going to, through the chair, propose a special meeting for June 6th, but are you saying now that might not be appropriate because we might run into the same problems as having a lower bid that it is non-responsive?
You never know with these. We don't.
Well, now I realize that.
Typically, I mean, we've done, gosh, I don't know, 20 bids in my time here, and that's the first one that has gone sideways. And really, it only went sideways because of a series of just coincidental events, and the biggest of which was that one of the lowest bidders put in a bid protest, and that just would have mired us. And the attorneys still think we would have won that. It just would have been in court for several months, and we didn't want to wait. So we just, you know what, throw them out, do it again, let's go. And that was the fastest way.
Then, if possible, through the chair, if I could request that you schedule a meeting for June 6th, a special meeting after the bid is submitted and approved.
Well, I don't think what they're saying is they may not be ready.
I just know that if we don't do that, we got that. You know, we always get into that time frame.
What I would propose to the board is that we are legally required to take the lowest responsive bidder. We will know who that is on the 6th, and if we can award that bid and then bring it back to the board as a ratification, because we want to get this going. So if we can get them on the site by June 7th, I don't think we want to wait.
Okay.
We're going to do it, unless there's some doubt you want to continue with the project. Otherwise, I would say, let's put the pedal to the metal and bring it back as a ratification.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Mr. Hodson saying, to allow them to go ahead and award the bid.
Makes sense.
Trust them to award the bid to the lowest bidder, then it's not going to slow the process down whatsoever.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Are all the contractors that have bid on this, are they pre-qualified?
At the beginning of this project, we were requesting that they be pre-qualified. Now, as it stands, contractors do not have to be pre-qualified to bid on this project, as it's under $1 million. So it kind of opens it up to a broader spectrum, so we're hopeful that we'll actually even get a better price, being that we're more competitive by opening it up to non-pre-qualified contractors.
So maybe it's my ignorance, Mr. Barnett, but tell me the difference between a pre-qualified contractor and a non-pre-qualified contractor.
A pre-qualified just means that we have a set of documents that's set by Department of General Services, and it's a mandated set of questions that we have to ask contractors in order for them to bid on public works for us. It goes into their financials, licensing, bonding capacity, history of work. It's just a broader spectrum. It really filters out the just kind of the riffraff of contractors, so to speak. You just have to be kind of more of the elite to be in public works. So pre-qualifying usually costs contractors quite a bit of money. Typically because they have to get their financial statements in order. It takes a lot of time for them to do so. So without pre-qualification, they still have to have their contractor's license. They still have to do the minimal to bid on public works. They have to be bondable, be registered with the Department of General Services. It's just not as – the screening just isn't there as much as there is when you go through the pre-qualified process. So once a year we open that up in our district to let contractors pre-qualify, and we keep that list. We also pre-qualify contractors 10 days before bid opening, so we're constantly bringing in new pre-qualified contractors. On this one, it's opened up below $1 million. So typically over $1 million, you're going to pre-qualify a contract, pre-qualify a contractor. Being that it's under $1 million, we fall under that. We can go with contractors that are not pre-qualified. So it's just kind of that's really kind of the defining caveat with that one, and it comes at an advantage to pre-qualify. But again, like I said, if a project's under $1 million, then we have that option as a district to say, you know what, we want more people to bid on this, we're not pre-qualifying contractors.
So when we did our first bid walk on March 19th, it was my understanding we did all those were pre-qualified contractors, and I gathered what you said. When we did another bid walk on May 15th, we opened it up to everybody and their brother. Is that somewhat accurate?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate right there.
Because the project's under $1 million.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
That's the line.
Oh, that's okay. The line, right.
Over $1 million, they have to be pre-qualified.
Correct.
Now we know. Based on the bids we received, we now know the project will be less than we anticipated, which will be under $1 million. So pre-qualification is no longer required.
And if I might add, the real hurdle with the pre-qualification is with the subcontractors. And under this pre-qualification rule, all your subs also have to be pre-qualified, which is why there was about, I think, $160,000 difference between the low bidder and the lowest responsive bidder. And what that basically means is everybody from your basic, you know, your plumber, for example, has to do this whole pre-qual, the exact same process, including turn in financials, have a letter from their CPA that vouches for their historical records. And finding those subs becomes very expensive, and consequently there's a premium on that. And so once we were sure that we could get in for under $1 million, I said, shoot, let's drop that. They're all going to still be qualified in terms of their mm-hmm. technical ability. They'll be licensed and the like. They just won't have gone through our, I don't know, it's a 15-page or more checklist worth of things they have to fill out and turn in. And again, particularly to the subs is where you really find that to be problematic.
Yeah, the whole terminology, at least to me as a layman, pre-qualification sounds like, does that preclude the quality of work on any level? Is that like a contractor in a state without a license? Or
There are some of the questions. Most of them are financial. And if you think about, like, if you had a general contractor and you give him some money, he's getting started, and then all of a sudden he packs up and walks on you, you could have a lot of problems.
Sure.
So most of the questions are, you know, financial. How many large projects have you worked on? There are some about, have you been in bid protests? Have you been, you know, sued? Have you been? There are some that go towards their history, but an awful lot of them are just really numerical type scores. Their present value and those type things.
Thank you.
Right, and I'd like to add to that is just because they're not pre-qualified definitely doesn't mean they're not qualified to do the work. They still have to follow the same building codes, Department of General Services, DSA guidelines, building codes, OSHA, all that stuff still applies. It just removes the aspects Mr. Hodson was speaking about.
Thank you very much.
So just wanted to make sure the board, so we're looking at what I heard Dr. Starkey say is we can go through and start the project. And then we would just ratify the contract at the next regular scheduled board meeting. And everybody's good with that? Okay. Thank you, Travis. I think we got stuck on one of your slides. And
yeah, sorry.
I got that one in there just for that, right up in here. Any more questions on that one? All right. Well, moving on. All right. So we have our Marysville High School Ag Mechanics. So we've done our punch walk on the 21st of this month. There were some minimal items out there that needed to be fixed, as expected with every project. We're looking for DSA closeout June 6th is what we've talked to the contractor and the DSA inspector. Again, some of those dates are subjective. So long as I get the contractor to finish their punch list items, we can move forward with that. You'll see at the bottom in July, I have PG&E meter removal. So PG&E has been, we have a meter on that building that needs to be removed. They weren't able to get it in the deadline that we're working with CTE funding, so we have to have everything billed before June 30th. So PG&E said they couldn't get there to pull their meter off until July, August, and we're shooting for July. But that is why you see that on there. It's because PG&E, the project will be complete, to my book, when PG&E comes and removes their meter. So that's why you'll see on there. You'll notice in the bottom corner, you'll see a pathway, which you'll see some change orders coming in that DSA hit us for a couple things that were unforeseen. We thought it did go through DSA and approved in the beginning, but then as we went through and the field inspector came out, they called some things out, and yeah, you'll see the walkway there. That's a new path of travel there on the back end of that picture that we had to add. Here we go with the Marysville South Auditorium. That project is complete. We are looking for DSA closeout now. We are waiting for Simplex Grinnell and Silent Night Fire Alarm to make their connections, which they are, I think they did it last week. So now we just need to test it and make sure everything's in order, and we'll get DSA closeout on that. So again, if you recall, there was a lot of acoustic panels, painting, new HVAC in that area. Everything is complete up to that point in that building. So ready for occupancy. And you will see we have our priority projects from Tier 1 designation as kind of an update. We haven't really had a chance to work too much on getting some of those pulled down. We've been currently working with different sites throughout the district on some of their site needs and assessments, which we've been going through with a couple firms, PVK and general architect firms. We're going to these sites and really looking at feasibility of what some of these sites' needs are with shade structures, new bleachers, playground equipment, things like that. So really been kind of emphasizing on those projects, trying to get real numbers put together and feasibility to accommodate some sites requests on projects. But we still are picking off this list. You'll see some that have pulled off, some have actually been added to it. But again, we're just moving forward.
So we're following the priority list pretty close, what we did.
It's kind of an evolving work in progress. It seems that it's almost like as one peels off, another comes in. You know, there's a lot of site needs, site assessments that go out. We get a lot of project requests from sites from replacing cracked bleachers that they're sitting on, you know. Also, that becomes a safety priority. So it kind of goes into that feasibility of what does that take? You know, the site originally on the facilities master plan could have requested that they wanted a shade structure. You know, now that we're getting to that point, they're looking at going, hey, shade structure we still need, but now we have this need for bleachers. So there's some things that are evolving and just trying to keep up with the sites, their needs. And as you know, we have administrators come and go, and those sites' needs change with students. And, you know, we're really just trying to focus
safety
on
needs.
Yeah, we're really just trying to keep up on them, but they're not really going to the wayside. It just seems like, as you know, we have very old facilities that we are trying to keep up with. And it seems that each year, if we knock off four or six more, pop up. So definitely still a priority, just trying to look at the different projects at sites and feasibility.
Excellent presentation,
Travis. Very good, Travis.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Yeah, I've got a question either for Mr. Barnett or Mr. Hodson, probably Mr. Hodson. Does the state set a lease-leaseback minimum amount on a project before you can use lease-leaseback?
Question in terms.
Lease-leaseback, is the state have a minimum dollar amount on a project?
On a
it has to be before you can do a lease-leaseback? Yeah.
I don't know. We can find that out.
Yeah. Okay. I was just curious because in the past when we did lease-leaseback, we had a lot less issues, it seemed like, on some of these projects. It seemed like a lot of things were ironed out way ahead of time, and we had a lot of success with it in the past. I think that's something that the board ought to go back and revisit. There were some law changes and some things that had gone on, but that was several months ago, maybe even a couple of years ago, and it might be something that we want to go back and look at and revisit, because I'm not sure how the process changed or what changed with all the new laws and stuff that came into place.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Travis.
You're welcome.
Just want to make a comment. Thank you all for hanging in there. I think this has definitely got to be a record for us this long into the agenda. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 5/14/19. If there's no additions or deletions, we'll entertain a motion. Motion approved by Mr. Fleury. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Davis. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Motion carries. 7 yes. Next we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve the consent agenda item in its entirety.
Motion by Mr. Crawford to approve. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Motion. One nay. Mr. Allison, nay. Motion carries. 6-1. Page 12, new business, educational services, college and career access pathways, CCAP, partnership agreement, a dual enrollment partnership agreement with Yuba Community College District. We're going to open a public hearing. Do we have any discussion regarding this item?
We did have a presentation last week, or last meeting. If not, is there a motion to close the public hearing?
Move to close the public hearing.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Motion carries. 7 yes. Now we need to have a motion regarding the item.
Motion to approve the agreement.
Motion by Mr. Boom to approve. Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Motion carries. 7 yes. Item 2, grades 6 through 8, middle school intensive intervention adoption. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing for the approval of the grades 6 through 8 middle school English language arts intensive intervention materials to be used as a temporary core English language arts program for students reading below the third grade level. We're going to open a public hearing. Is there any discussion regarding the material from the public or the public hearing?
If nobody's coming forward, there's no discussion. I'll make a motion to close the hearing.
Motion to close by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Now we need a motion regarding the intervention materials.
Motion to approve the intervention material as read.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second? Second by Ms. Scott. Any further discussion? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Student discipline and attendance. Board policy 5131.2, bullying. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing regarding the revisions to board policy 5131.2, bullying. We now open the public hearing. Do we have any staff that maybe would want to address this? No.
It's just following the CSBA policy manual, so we're adopting that policy as they present it.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, we'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Motion by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Now we need a motion regarding the new board policy.
Motion to approve revisions to board policy 5131.2.
Motion by Mr. Boom. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Davis. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. 7 yes. Looks like we're meeting adjourned.